One of the consequences of the Afghan campaign, and indeed the Iraq campaign, is the focus on servicemen and women who come home with injuries, physical and mental, and much greater public awareness of the help they often need. Service charities, of course, provide a great deal of assistance, but there are many in the military who believe that whoever is elected on May the 6th, more should be done by government. Indeed, we heard Sir Richard Dannett, the former head of the army, saying a few minutes ago that these men and women would want everybody to cast a vote because it's very important that what they do is supported by people at home. It's part of the same argument. I went last night to the Royal British Legion in North Newcastle to talk to two former soldiers who have had difficulties after their service careers and to talk to them about what they think is needed. Paul McClintock, the 1st Battalion Royal Green Jackets when he was in the army, is largely confined to a wheelchair now and on morphine pretty well all the time to control back pain. David Hall, 23 Pioneer Regiment, spent 18 months on the dole after 5 years in the army before he was helped to start his own business. He thinks the public's much more aware than it once was that many young people come out of the forces needing help.
Yes, I think it's a lot more publicised now with obviously Iraq and Afghanistan, a lot more people come back, not with just physical injuries, mental injuries as well, post-traumatic stress and such. And I have got a friend who did suffer post-traumatic stress from Iraq and ended up doing something which he shouldn't have done because he couldn't receive the help and he had to go to jail. But in jail he did receive help from the British Legion and they helped him rehabilitate himself, and he's went on to much bigger and better things at the moment.
Paul, you were badly injured in your back, you're on morphine all day, every day. You're in a wheelchair. I think at one point you tried to take your life.
I did, about 3 years ago now, because I was getting that low and no one was taking a blind bit of notice to me. But then, you know, ever since that, I've gone up and up and trying to help other people now so they don't get into that situation I was in.
I think people in the army get this tough guy image where they don't want to break down and cry or talk about their problems or their depression or something like that, but obviously, if they are suffering, they shouldn't be sitting there in silence, and it's good to know that the British Legion and other companies are there to help them.
Joe Connolly here from the Royal British Legion. What is the pattern of the difficulty that people have? Let's say, apart from obvious physical injuries, but where you're dealing with people who develop problems after they've come home and had a traumatic experience, how long does it take for that to show itself?
A lot of the figures at the moment are showing that problems arise with around mental health problems, or at least a combination of problems that come to a head around 12 to 13 years after the conflict. And it's something that we will have to plan for into the future with the current conflicts ongoing now.
It's just starting to come where they are getting the respect that they deserve. I suppose there was a time not so long ago where the squaddies weren't respected for what they do, whereas now you see them when they're being repatriated, processions that are happening through their hometowns or throughout the country, you can see the respect from the people of the UK, and I think that's got to go on, and people to thank squaddies in the street when they meet them. Obviously, people say squaddies aren't paid enough, and I'm behind that all the way, but you can't just go giving them more money. There's a lot of them to pay. Just giving them the respect and the gratitude that I think they deserve and they think they deserve. A lot of people, they get a little bit, frustrated because people don't respect them, don't give them the respect they deserve after they've been halfway across the world fighting to keep these streets safe.
I spoke to a few people, and they say, well, at the end of the day, they're not involved with the war, so they're not bothered about it. But then you talk to a few people that are more interested in saying, well, they're doing a good job because, you know, they are keeping our streets safe. They should just listen as well, like the government stuff should just listen and then recognise what people are wanting and needing for when they come out, because at the end of the day, they're not getting it at the moment. So forces from generations past to now, they've had a raw deal from any government that's been in. They're not getting listened to, they're not getting looked after.
Two former soldiers there and Joe Connolly of the Royal British Legion in Newcastle. I'm joined by a retired army officer, Colonel George Myers, here talking to these two men yesterday in the Royal British Legion. You realise what close links this area has, particularly with the army. It's a very strong recruiting area. A lot of young men still go on, of course, particularly at times of high unemployment. People are noticing this more. Do you think that this is going to lead to more being done, apart from the charities which do such a good job?
I would like to think that the government, under probably public pressure, will eventually realise they have a greater responsibility to these young men and women who are, in effect, actually putting their lives on the line in a lot of cases. When they do come back, they need help and support.
Well, I think that the Legion in this city is, I think, dealing with about 300 cases at any given time. Joe Connolly there from the Legion made a very interesting point that consistently, since the Second World War, it has been about a dozen years after the conflict when some people who don't appear to have suffered in any great way start to exhibit symptoms of real difficulty. Now, that's apart from the people who are badly injured or have a particular difficulty instantly. Has that been your experience?
Not my personal experience, but...
No, I mean people you've known.
The figures prove that this is correct. I mean, the last great upsurge in shall we say, post-traumatic stress was as a result of the Falklands some 22 years ago. But now, it came about 15 years after.
See, the point is, if you look at Iraq and Afghanistan and people fighting, living under very, very difficult conditions, and many, many of them, it is quite clear that in a decade or so from now, we're going to face a very big problem if previous history is repeated, and there's no reason to suppose it won't be.
If something isn't put in place now to take steps to ensure that these young men and women receive the right counselling, they are debriefed in the right way, they are brought back to, shall we say, normal life, because certainly what they're doing is far from normal.
I was very struck in the conversation. We talked for quite a long time, actually. We only heard a snatch of it there, of course, that the extent to which these two young men believe that... It's slightly easier now to talk about these things than it was, let's say, 20 years ago, because, you know, you would have been thought a wimp. You just kind of closed the curtains and started drinking or whatever it was. Now there's more ability to be open. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I do. I think the psychiatric services provided by the military are improving every day. And they have a process by which when units return, they're not allowed to sort of rush off back into mainstream life. They are decompressed, for want of a better
expression.
Charities
like Combat Stress, of course, help.
Yeah, they're there.
But it's about public awareness and pressure, that's your view.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, there's nothing like a general election campaign for pressure.